Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Also, this show is made possible by donations from our very kind patrons. Our current patrons are John Donna, Stephanie L., and Terry Needleman. Thank you for your very kind donations, and we hope we keep giving you a great show. All right, on to the real show. Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Musicals with Cheese. In this podcast, I will be interviewing Ellen Winter and Chris Littler, the two creative minds behind the incredible podcast musical 36 Questions. This interview was recorded in late 2018, originally intended to be used in a video essay. However, this did not reach completion due to there not being very visual aids for a podcast musical. What was I thinking? Either way, let me give you some history about 36 Questions before we dive further in. 36 Questions is a podcast musical starring Jesse Shelton and Jonathan Groff. In this three-part podcast musical, a couple attempts to bring their marriage back from the brink of divorce using 36 revealing questions designed to make strangers fall in love. If you haven't listened to the musical before, please do. I highly recommend it, and I would rather you give it a listen before listening to this very spoiler-heavy interview. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. This is Chris Littler and Ellen Winter on 36 Questions.
And what's true for you doesn't have to be true forever.
Well, today I am joined by two super special guests that I'm going to let introduce themselves, but really two incredible human beings, so please introduce yourselves.
Okay. Ellen, you want to go first or me to go first?
You go first.
My name is Chris Littler. I'm a co-writer, co-director, co-composer of a podcast musical called 36 Questions. My co-writer is Ellen Winter. And we are here to talk about 36 Questions and about making audio fiction musical thing.
Yeah. And I'm Ellen Winter, the co-writer, director, composer as well, and super stoked to go into the depths of our audio musical brain savings.
Brain savings is better than thing. Oh, you went up to me yet again.
Oh, sorry.
That's good. You punched it up.
I was trying to punch it up.
Good punch it up.
Okay, so the first question is, what is your backgrounds and individual like experiences with musical theater, and what made you decide to go into musical theater as an outlet for creative expression?
Yeah, I grew up in Northern Virginia. I went to high school in D.C. at like a performing arts high school kind of a thing. And actually theater was my first love. And musical theater was a huge component of that. And I'd been writing songs like basically all through growing up. And then in college, I went to Sarah Lawrence, where I intended to go in to study acting and playwriting, but was very much like whole time continuing to write songs and eventually like concept songs and concept albums. And I realized that I was writing plays independently of writing music. And like, all I really wanted to do was like theatricalize the music I was writing. And then I was like, oh, I want to write musicals. this whole time. So that was like a big revelation. That I had in my college years. And I met Chris around that time, and we started working together in a band called Chamber Band that Chris started with a bunch of like concept albums based in fictional universes. So I would say like in terms of what came first, like the love for podcast or musical theater, I would say like podcast was like a lovely thing to blossom out of our love for both like indie music and theater. Like for me, I really love working in new theater and new musical theater and finding ways to like find the overlap between that and new music.
So is it my turn?
Yeah, I'm heading it off. This is me. I'm passing.
That was the pass up? Okay, cool.
That was a toss-up.
Is that what they call them in sports? The pass up?
The pass up. Yeah, that's like a sports thing.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. Anyway, so I started my professional sports career at the age of four. It's playing soccer. No, I'm very similar to Ellen. I have a deep love for music and songwriting that started pretty early on. And I went to school. Not specifically for that. I went to school for screenwriting. And throughout that whole process, I always would come back to music because it's just inherently cathartic to write music. Sometimes it's necessary to write music. And Ellen and I were in chamber bands. And we wrote two full albums together. But it was I went to NYU for screenwriting, and it was my freshman year roommate, Zach Akers, and our other friend who went to NYU, Skip Bronchi. They got into podcasting, doing a show called Limetown. Their follow-up to that was 36 Questions. And so that was the connection that got me there. And so this was kind of being able to fuse storytelling and music in a great way. And it was nice to be able to flex the theatrical musical muscle, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah.
It felt like it really felt like a dream come true, but it wasn't like a dream that I was actively chasing when it happens. And now it's all I want to do is make more musicals.
You caught it. You caught the bug.
I got the bug, baby. Let's do it. Next stop, Broadway.
So you guys started working together on Chamber Band, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at what point did you guys start considering the project 36 Questions, or the project that would become 36 Questions?
It was brought to us. It was so Skip and Zach had the original idea for 36 Questions, which is going to be more like a Linklater-esque indie movie. Same concept of a couple who are on the rocks, maybe on the brink of divorce, using these 36 questions to resolve their differences. And then they got it in their heads that they wanted to do a musical because that would be stretching the podcast form, which is what they're working in. So they brought us into that idea. And from that point on, Ellen and I were working to basically come up with our version of that conceit and building it from there.
Yeah. And a lot of our, as we were talking about, we did those two albums together that we wrote, and those were both based in fictional worlds, and so we were kind of towing the line of musical theater for a while, and it was very it felt like, in a weird way, where the runway had been heading the whole time is we're just gonna write a musical together eventually, and had definitely exchanged and had conversations about what musicals we liked. And when we kind of got into the thick of writing it in Skip and Zach came to us in late 2015 with the idea, around this time, I think, actually.
Oh, it's the anniversary.
Oh.
Some weird anniversary.
Late 2015. And we were we were super excited by the idea of raising that music storytelling to another level.
We came up with a process too.
Yeah, yeah. A process that is not typical, I would say, of most musical theater writing pairs.
Which I didn't know going into it.
You had written a musical by yourself. I had written a musical by myself and worked on musicals independently. So we didn't really have a model for what the collaboration process should be, aside from what we had already, which was how we write songs together, which is very much hey, I have this idea and I want to bring it to you and let it go through your brilliant brain filter and see what comes out on the other end. And so that just works for us for both music and lyrics and scenes, which is fun.
So your guys' writing process wasn't specifically you're the music guy and you're the lyric guy. It was more a collaborative, everyone on board process.
No, we had music guy and lyric guy. We paid them out of pocket. Yeah. So Ellen said, there's everything passes through us, and mm-hmm. the genesis of we can both come up with ideas for both sides. And it's usually comes down to, once we have some sort of breakthrough, it's like, what sounds the most fun to you? Okay, I'll do this part and you do this part. And then we come back and it passes through, and kind of like a DNA strand. You know, it's a double.
Yeah, the DNA musical strand does this kind of thing. This is good. This is some good gift content right here.
This is good. Oh, you're right. Got to think about that.
Oh, that was great. So what is your direct, like, musical influences to 36 Questions? I know you mentioned Linklater as, like, a structural influence, but this doesn't have, like, the casual musical theater, like, structure. I mean, this entire show is, like, made out of the conditional love song.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sondheim and Alan Menken are, like, big musical guideposts for us. I would also say, like, we each pull from different musical theater writers we like too. I'd say, like, that's our Venn diagram overlap in terms of musical theater. But we also, I would say, like, obviously, I really like Cesar Alvarez and Heather Christian, who are, like, new musical theater writers. What about you, Chris?
I'm trying to think of, like, who we were trying to musically emulate, but I'm really coming up short.
Well, I would say, like, musical, those are, like, musical theater structure humans, but musically I feel like mostly pulled from, like, music we listen to. Like, we were looking at Alt J, we were looking at Fiona Apple, we were looking at Sylvanesso, we were looking at.
I remember talking about Fiona Apple a lot because we knew we wanted it to be Baby Grand Piano. And
yeah,
we knew we had Sam, our drummer, our percussion dramaturg. So when it came to, we knew what the components were, and we just knew we wanted to keep it simple.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all so coming back to me now.
Yeah. Yeah, I would almost say that, like, structurally and musically, we kind of pulled from different places with the faith and hope that it would distill into something that made sense. Or, like, if we take these things that we really love and feel very strongly about and kind of put all of these different elements in one space.
Right.
Let's, like, see how it plays out. This, like, Linklater, Sondheim, Fiona Apple thing.
Right. But I mean, am I crazy to think that the songs are very much in your musical writing style, right? Like, they feel like very much of your, you know, cut from Helen Wintercloth. I mean, right? When they all, like, live on, When they all live on the same album together? Am I crazy?
I think they live in the same world. But I would also say, like, they also are a result of our collaboration too, and just the kind of...
Oh, I was there. Yeah, no, you're right. I was there.
It's our style. I mean, a couple of the songs came from
stuff
songs
you had.
That used to be, that were, like, set at one point. And then Chris was like, this would be great with a chorus. And I was like,
add a chorus. Basically what I do is I pace and say, let's add a chorus.
Can it just go up here? Just, like, make it go.
Just literally, here's the hot tip. Just go up an octave have a chorus. Just go up an octave. There's science here. There's a New York Times article about it. Just read it. It's cheat. Major cheat. Go up an octave. I'm not kidding. Isn't that why we're here? To give the hot tips?
Or up the fifth, you know?
Yeah, fifth. Do both. You can.
Do both. Why not do
both? Find the highest key on the piano that you can hit. And reach that note.
That's a long.
Sustained notes.
Long sustained notes, like the long sustained answer to the question.
Sorry, am I taking?
Sorry, that was we got lost.
What else we got?
You
know, I'm just so happy to hear that this was never a point in this production process where it was an actual first date where they had to get to know each other using the questions. I'm glad it always started this way.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder. I think that. Yeah. I don't know if it was based on reality, but certainly I know part in our process. I mean, we both did it.
We both did the questions with our significant others.
That we're still together with.
Yeah, I think mine just got home. Hi, Simon.
Well,
yeah.
Ask him one of the questions. questions. Ask him question 30, 18. Ask him question 18.
Chris. I'll ask him
with 18.
It's a bad question to start with.
Oh, you're right. I know the first half really well. The second half, I don't remember as well.
Second half is like all of is basically just leading up to question 36 or songified.
Right.
Well, my next question is, anyway, which song is the hardest to write? Like, which one was the one you struggled the most with? And which one was the easiest to write? The one that just came out and you were like, bam, 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 bam.
That's a good question.
Hey, that's a really good question.
I have a vote for hardest.
Yeah, I have a couple of votes for hardest. What's your vote?
I vote that We Both is the hardest. Was the hardest.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Oh, it's a funky song.
We both think you look great in a knit sweater. We both enjoy an empty cafe. We both are the actual human beings to waiters. We both are not totally straight. None of that.
We had a lot of different versions of We Both, which was like, I think ultimately like the solution. I mean, there was a whole other song that was going to happen before that song. So like, I was trying to justify that song. And then Chris kind of was like, okay, hot take. Let's cut that song and then smush this whole scene so that it exists within We Both. And that was like a huge revelation as I was hitting my head against the keyboard trying to figure out the other songs of that act. So I remember very vividly you coming into the office and being like, I figured it out. Here's a crazy idea. And I was like, that's brilliant. You've cracked it.
It's always a good fix when it's always like, hey, you know that thing you're working on? You don't do it anymore.
Yeah. So exactly. It's like everything you're doing right now is the effort's great. I fixed it.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone now. But yeah, it's an interesting song. I think it's just so crazy that all the songs kind of fit into it. And I listen to it on Spotify. I'm always like, do I want to hear all these questions right now? And it's just the right amount of questions, in my opinion, before you're like, okay, I don't know if I could do more exposition / meet cutie stuff in the middle of the song. I think yeah. I managed to walk that line successfully. IMHO. That's just an opinion.
Totally.
And what do we think is the easiest?
The truth felt like it was a really like even collaboration song where like essentially we had some idea of like what that song was going to be. And Chris had like one of the things that we'll do is Chris will like word vomit a bunch of lyrics and just be like, this is the movement of the song. And I'll be like, cool, great. I get this emotional journey. And then like I'll basically do my brain music filter through that and see what comes of that. And
I gave you a whole song though for that one. I gave you a hokey song.
Yeah, you gave me a song.
You were like, this is work. Let me throw out all your music. Make entirely new music.
I was really nervous about tech. I think I texted you and I was like, so Chris, like this is great, but please don't be mad. I have an entirely different song idea for this.
And I remember getting that and being like, sick.
Yeah, you're like, keep going. I was like, can I keep going with this idea? And you were like, just keep doing it. But it sick. Came out like in an afternoon. And then
it's wonderful.
And it was very much like using the lyrics that had been a part of that old song and just like finding a way to kind of repurpose them in this new like groove that we found.
But the truth is, the truth doesn't exist in black and white. Sometimes two sides can both be right.
That was an easy song because you did all of it. So it was super easy for me. Thanks.
No, you did the words. We did the. It was a team effort.
Oh right. And I swapped some things around for how they were gonna say their end. Like I wanted to keep the mantra at the ending, which is very.
Yeah. You're good. You give those that structure brain. Put that in there.
It's all up here, baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Judith Ford was also very easy, I would say.
Judith Ford. Oh, right. Yeah. So that was one of the ones that was like the genesis was my tinkling on a piano.
Yeah. And that was like.
It's an anxiety song.
Uh-huh.
That was easy for you because I did all the work on that?
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I was the lyric filter on that one. I was like, what? swap some of these, but generally.
Yeah.
What was that?
But none of them were easy.
The easy things came after usually like several days, weeks, and or months of feeling like it was not easy. And then it
felt it just pops out. Yeah. It's like, bonk. Oh, that's the right thing.
Yeah.
And then, and then hopefully you just forget all the agony that came before.
Forget all the other drafts.
About how many drafts did you have for each song?
Oh, numerically, it's impossible to know.
Yeah.
It's just like pain, really. Yeah.
Well, like some of pain. Them, it was very much like only a couple of drafts,
right?
Before we like really got to it. Like I would say, "Hear Me Out." Once we figured out what "Hear Me Out" was, Natalie Cook, all those first episode songs, we were like, it's like kind of like you were saying, they're all conditional love songs. They were all transactional. It was all like, this is the thing that I want, the thing that I need from you, and this is how I'm going to get it. And we're also getting all the exposition about like why they're in the situation and why the stakes are the way they are. So we were like, cool. We just get to like kind of color in this world. And then once we got to like act two and three, it was like, oh my God. Okay. So now what are they going to do with all this information?
Right.
And those were, as those songs moved with the moving pieces of the show, the drafts just got like, yeah, probably in the, definitely in the double digits.
For maybe. Sure in the double digits. Yeah. By the end, maybe triple. I mean, but like you're doing like a bunch of drafts a day.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
When you're in the thick of it. It really is the hardest work is this, is getting to the song. Cause once the song, like the game of the song has been figured out, forgive me if I'm overstating this, Ellen, but like once you figure out the game of the song, I feel like it's actually pretty easy just to put something on the page and come
right,
up with
right.
Right? It's the like the justifying. Yeah, like creating the game that the song is going to be the game, you know, putting that in quotes.
Right. Yeah, right. Like once we figured out that like one thing was like a cumulative.
Yeah, the list of them.
We were like, oh, cool.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's all stuff. Yeah. You got zany sound effects.
A duck.
Yeah. A duck. Why not?
Well, you guys are also the rare musical theater writers that are also the book writers. So was there any strategies that you used to ensure that the spoken word matches the sung prose of the songs?
Yeah. Did you say did we have strategy?
Like things that you would say like avoid these phrases because they're not Jace or avoid this because it's not Natalie, that type of stuff.
Oh, like musical phrasings.
Kind of.
I feel like the thing that was actually, I wouldn't say that we were super cognizant of like musical phrasings, which is like maybe showing our hand, but truly it was for us, it's like so much, I would say so much the lyrics inform the phrasing, and it was mostly like clocking the lyrics or like where, through which like lens this emotional experience is being told through. Like there were a lot of versions of Natalie's Judith songs, where I would take a first hit at writing them out, and Chris would be like, Ellen, this is great. This is exactly what Jace would say if this was
classic Jace pretending to be Judith.
Pretending to be Judith, and I was like, God damn it, this is a Jace song. I fucked it up. And then Chris would be like, let me take a try. And then I would be like, oh, okay, great. Filter it through. Cause it's like very much like what we kind of discovered is like I identify with more of Jace, and Chris identifies more with Judith. So and the same thing happened vice versa. So when we would write from our heart spot, sometimes like, you know, we would do a Jace song that would come across as too Judith-y and would need to like revise on that too. So we were kind of able to clock each other, and we had Chris's then fiance, now wife, who was our story consultant, also come in. She's like knows a ton about like Myers-Briggs stuff, has written books about it, like really knows people's personalities, really great at tracking character work, and was a huge asset in making sure that all of our scenes and our songs like really tracked for the characters.
Yeah, that's kind of her main job, really, was just to be like, are you being consistent across the course of this narrative with these characters? Are there... Yeah. And that was one of the first things we came up with. We came up with theme. I remember throwing theme up on the board. And I remember creating like a T-chart of these are the characters, and they're going to be opposites of each other. They're going to have an endless reason to fight, really, because they're never going to see eye to eye on these things. Or if they move, they move really incrementally. So we knew that if we ever got into a bind in which we got into lots of binds, when you're writing something. We knew that there was always going to be an out because there was always going to be a source of conflict.
Hey guys, we're sorry to interrupt you in the middle of this really good interview with Chris and Ellen, but I gotta shill at you. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Again, that's audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. And also, while I'm interrupting you, I should let you know what websites Ellen and Chris are at. You can find Ellen at ellenwintermakesthings.com, and you can help fund her upcoming album, Every Feeling I've Ever Felt. It is oncoming, and I'm sure she'll appreciate any donation, so shoot her some donations. You can find Chris Littler at his website, chrislittler.com, or where you will find all of his work from 36 Questions to Limetown to Chamber Band. They're both incredible people, and you should go out and support their work. All right, let's get you back to the interview.
Tonight, I say goodbye to Natalie. She was 33.
So this show has the theme of truth and makes an argument that there can be emotional honesty without being factually honest. I'm curious of your guys' positions on truth and its factuality versus emotionality. Or your personal definition of truth and honesty?
Anyway, that was too hard of a question, so we got to go. sorry, not happening.
I feel like, I'm just like sinking, letting that sink in. It's very much, it was kind of something that we ended up stumbling into once we unlocked that. We were like, well, what is the highest possible stakes for them doing the questions? Basically, is what is the game that we played, right? We were like, well, what if their marriage or relationship hinged on these questions? And the only reason that one would be so motivated to do them a second time is to prove that they can, that they were not, maybe they weren't truthful the first time. And what that kind of unlocked for us was just, you know, everybody kind of, it felt like something we could all kind of relate to in a weird way. I mean, on an extreme level, but like, you know, when you first meet someone you like, you want to be the best version of yourself. You want to like, we're constantly thinking about like the narratives that we tell about ourselves, even through like social media. Like, what are you posting? What are you tweeting? What are you sharing? Like, there's 90% of your life that doesn't exist on the like curated narration that you provide to the world. Does that make that any less true? You know, like, so it was kind of a thing, like Chris and I often talk about like wanting to give ourselves a problem that neither of us have an answer to, like, and that being the heart of the thing we make. And this really felt like, we were like, well, I kind of get why she did what she did and why she continued to do it. And really like making it about personal truth. Like that was important to us too. I think about like really about what it is that Judith as like, an individual person was really going through in terms of the narrative that she was trying to tell.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Sure, Chris, you had any like, okay, all right.
No, that was perfect. That was exactly why. I mean, yeah, it's the unsolvable problem. And on any given day, I still don't know what side I'm on.
Oh, yeah. Shit follows you, man.
My personal definition of truth.
Does it lean more to the factual side of honesty or the emotional side of honesty?
That's interesting. I think it's, I really think I'm very middle ground about it. I don't think that someone, it's so funny. It's like, do people have the right to obscure the facts? Do people have the right, like if you cheat on your partner and you don't tell them, is that a kindness? Because then you are keeping, you know, like like, then you're like, then the pain is not put on them. The pain is put on you, the person that perpetrated, you know, like, it's so slippery for me. Like, what, because truth is subjective regardless, like, yeah. Besides like science fact, truth is subjective. Our lived experience is full of hypocrisies and infallibilities and things that we take for granted that are not necessarily so, right? So like, just take that for the baseline of it. Then we're just like, then everything, almost everything is just emotional. Everything, that it's the truth that I choose to share with you about who I am. It's the truth that we choose to engage in any given day. I'm Chris Littler. I'm an American and I live in an open democracy. I don't know for sure about what those things, you know, like what if that is actually true? What is that the story that I tell myself just to get through this day? I don't think I would have been as interested in this show if I had a neat answer for that question.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like in my brain, I kind of see two different definitions of truth, which is like also tricky, but it's like, for me, there's like the truth of like a literal fact, right? Like, or an event that is like seemingly objective. And then there is like the subjective truth. But it is all about like, I think it's, yeah, discovering what that line is of like subjective and objective truth. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly like on like an emotional and personal way, I mean, it's just so funny, like even like using that example, like the first thought I'm like, well, it really depends on like the two people in that relationship. It's like,
right.
If your relationship is there are some people that like, if that were to happen and you'd be like, oh, this thing happened, it would be totally chill, you know, that would be like a conversation. And then there's another where that would like, you know, if the motivations behind telling that kind of confession were to relieve oneself of the guilt and put that on, you know, it's like there's so many different shades to it. It really depends on like who's telling the story and like from what angle they're telling it from and like why they're telling it. So truth is like, yeah, I think that there's also like truth that we don't see about ourselves, but then that kind of becomes someone else's idea of the truth of your story. So it's right. Like, it's super messy. You. Yeah, they put it on. They put it on you. But yeah, like Chris said, it's like, I don't really know. And that's kind of why it was fun to try and figure it out. Because I feel like I know what my gut instincts of truth when it comes to the world or like, you know, but those are kind of my opinions that I hope are steeped in truth. But in terms of like a personal narrative truth, it's like, I feel like every day I'm trying to like get to like the honest shit of like, what am I doing? What does that really mean?
Those are some really fantastic answers, guys. Like, it's really, really good.
I'm like thinking about truth over here. I'm like,
truth philosophy. Oh my god! I'm gonna go to bed after this. Yeah, please. Man.
I promise, there's nothing that heady coming up.
Got it.
So this show has two leads that are very flawed and have very blatant hamartias. So was there ever a worry that you made them too unlikable and had to pull them back or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, totally. We were like, how on earth do we get people on Judith's side when she just admitted to lying to her husband for 2 years? And how do we like Jace when he's like wants to punch her? I mean, like in a non-domestic violent way, but like metaphorically, figuratively punch this person for like pooping on his heart, like, you know, you don't like
ultimately.
Well, that was the thing that we were just given in the first moment, right? That's why Henry kind of came about, and that's why we give that moment of those moments of them in love at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Other things, Chris? I feel like I just vomited all of that.
Yeah. No, there's like, you're so 100% saying exactly what I would say. I'm just staying silent. So what I can say is that's exactly true. It was endless. You're endlessly being like, okay, how far can we push this character? How do you remain truthful to this character?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, sometimes you have little cheats. Like a duck is a cheat, right?
Right. Cause we were like, oh, we can show him being kind of rude to Judith / Natalie. But then we have this adorable creature for him to show his kindness to, right, as like instead of comic relief, it's like cuteness relief. It's like sweet relief. We're like, oh, Jace isn't a monster person. He's just has his heart broken. And he's taking care of this duck to try and make himself feel better.
Takes care of the duck better than he takes care of his own kid. That's Jace.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah, I honestly expected the kid's name to be Henry in the end.
So weird. What should we name our son? Well, I had a duck one. Oh, it was a crazy night.
Oh, man. what a crazy night.
What a crazy night, though.
So were there any songs that didn't make it into the final product, like any Kill Your Darlings moments that you're just still sad isn't quite there anymore?
Oh, yeah. There's like so many songs.
There's at least four that I can think of. There's the four that were in the original version of the show, which is very different from this one that never came back around. And then there was a bunch of alts for the beginning of Act Two, where we both went.
Mm-hmm.
And a possible Act Two, like, blowout number.
Right. The
Yeah.
There was like
kind of angrier songs, kind of more. Yeah. It didn't fit.
Got a little more Dresden Dolls than Fiona Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, emotionally,
I don't think. I mean, if they were like fully written songs that like were like conveying a ton of heart and like getting crazy work done, and we had to cut them for time, that would be one thing. But we never were in that situation.
No, I mean, even songs that were full drafts that we ended up cutting, we were just like, ultimately, this song isn't working, and that's and like Chris and I, a big part of our process is we have so much. From being in a band together and from working on like a bunch of different shows now, like we just have archives and archives of like song ideas that we've kind of categorized and titled by different emotions.
Not even emotions sometimes, just like weird.
Just weird titles. It's like sinister. Yeah, I don't know.
Sinister
like
disco.
Businessman in the sinister disco.
Or just like outright who we're ripping off. Like there's one song that's just called Tegan and Sarah right now. It's just straight up like this is a song that Sarah haven't this is yet
just
written.
This is just a ripoff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those songs go into our ripoff bin, our ripoff recycling bin. So we rip ourselves off in the future.
Yeah, because inventing is like. I don't know. Inventing is you got to kind of be alone to invent, right? I feel like that's like a big part of our process. Like, you go over here, you go over here. I'm going to invent something.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different from like being together and being like, all right, we got this. We need a song for this. Like, let's just think about the songs we have. Oh, mm-hmm. It's just like it's more like collaging as opposed to inventing. So it's just nice to have all that.
Inventing will sometimes come out of like jamming, though. Or like
That's true. Like, what's the feeling? Okay, what's the feeling of this moment? Let's just that's a nice feeling. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm hooked. Chris, we should totally jam sometime soon.
You want to jam? You want to tell them my history of jamming and how I was like the worst about jamming?
Yeah, we used to joke that Chris was just this like old lady. I just always imagined you with like a wig holding like a can of jelly or like a jar of jelly saying no more jamming.
It's like no more jam.
Just jelly. When we were in a band, and we would get too jammy. Chris would be like, guys, we have this space only for like an hour. We can't just like let's practice our set. We have a show on Thursday.
Truly.
Well, someone's got to be that guy sometimes, you know? Someone's got to just be that guy.
Yeah, or that grandma, you know? So
someone's got to be that grandma.
Grandma
is like the best case scenario for that. So I'm glad that's how you picture
it. It was like a loving. I think your family's of love, mostly.
Mostly love.
Mostly love.
It's my autobiography. It came mostly with love. Some of it came
That's good.
Darker
that's
good. Feeling.
So the end of your show is so mature, so intelligent, so well thought out, and I love it, but were there any other alternative endings that you considered while writing the show?
Interesting. We definitely had a lot of different variations on that ending.
Yeah.
I think one of the mantras that we had really from, spoiler alert, you're going to cut this together, but we'll just say spoiler alert right now for ourselves in case the three of us haven't
just
seen
it. Just for the three of us, yeah.
Yeah. But like going back to that original like T section and like the original thing Ellen was talking about, like the original like thing that kicks off the show of like, I've been lying to my husband for 2 years. I feel like we were always like, there's just no way. Like there's no way for them to be back. There's no way. There's no you want so desperately to come back from that. But for me, it never felt realistic to me. It never seemed plausible to me if you really played it out. So I feel like we were always trying to be hopeful and always trying to keep them. We're trying to smash these two people together and get them to be the best versions of themselves together. It just never seemed feasible. Right, Ellen? Or was that not in your brain? That's just me.
No. I think we talked about that. I mean, it was like, even the hopeful version of this where like they try, like I think we were like, you know, some people listen to that ending and they think it's very ambiguous as to like what happens after that song. And for a while too, I was like, you know what? I kind of feel like maybe we want to leave it open-ended and ambiguous. And like, I actually, you know, I could, there's honestly, my opinions about it kind of fluctuate where like there's time where I'm like, they totally gave it another try. You know, I think it didn't work out, but maybe they gave it a try. But ultimately I think it's like what we were talking about of like, there's no way to like recover from it.
When you imagine them trying, are you just imagining them like they go drop off Cooper and oh, he leaves like Cooper in the car and they go to a motel and just do it?
They leave Cooper in a car? No.
Yeah, leave Cooper in the car, windows down. This is Chase we're talking about. Leave the windows down and they just go bone in a motel. Is that what you're saying?
No. But that's not far off. It's like
first draft?
It's adjacent to whatever. Yeah, it's first draft.
First draft idea?
I'm like, you know, he gets a babysitter. They maybe like, you know, maybe they Uber home. I don't know.
Right.
Who knows? I didn't really think it through because we ended it where we did. So.
Oh, right. Only thinking through now.
Yeah. But I think ultimately, though, it was like what we didn't want in the story was like a neatly tied ending because we were like, they've been through enough. I think they're kind of at the end of the day, we wanted it to feel like a realistic journey for both of them. So, which we feel like we don't always see in musical theater. As much as we love musical theater, sometimes pretty good at sad endings.
Right. La La Land had a dance poem.
I hold the belief that musical theater is at its best when it's very specific and specificity is very important. And you guys do that incredibly well with things like Settlers of Catan and Chase's Mom. So I'm wondering where those came about from and whether it be your real life or just specific things that you thought would fit these characters. As well, what made you guys decide to make this a period piece?
When did it become a period piece? I guess when we knew that there was a time jump, right?
When we knew that, we kind of figured out that the study came out while Jace was with his like new lady. And through that time jump, we kind of worked backwards and we're like, oh, we know it has to be on an iPhone. So.
And the specifics are just pulled from our lives, really.
Yeah, truly.
I mean, that's whenever you're making a joke, right? Truth in comedy, it's got to feel real to your co-writer. So you're like, why this joke? You're like, because that's true. But it's always the easiest defense when you make a choice.
Yeah. Right?
That's real. That really happens, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in a better version, did you guys run over a squirrel with your car, or is that
Home Depot? I did not run over a squirrel, but
you heard it here first, folks. Phony Ellen Winter did not run over a squirrel.
But I do recycle more and enjoy cooking more. And
is the glass of water on the bedside table you and Simon?
Glass of water on the bedside table is me and my partner.
I remember Home you Depot. Defending that.
I felt really strongly
about this fucking water. Like, who gives a shit? What does this even tell us about like, them?
It means that they are thinking about their thirst needs. If they wake up in the middle of the night and they have a dry mouth, because radiators really make us face dry, and you just have to be prepared.
That's true. See, it feels real. It feels real. She's got real.
I've got real stakes in these glass of water.
Judith Ford, Jay says, my celeb wife, Charlize Theron. That is true of me. Celeb wife. Mm-hmm. That is my celeb wife, Charlize Theron. I know that it would never work. She's so different.
You guys are like so different.
She's so different. in good ways. I mean, she would push me but you know, eventually we'd break. It'd be too hard. Plus she travels so much. I assume. And then what was it? Over Obama and over
Rihanna.
Rihanna was originally Malala.
Malala, but Malala was not relevant in 2007.
Right. So another specific, but we are willing to change the specifics if it will create a time paradox.
Yes.
That's our limit. That's our hard edge.
So what is the incredible success of this incredible musical brought you now that it's all been done?
I can die happy. I don't know about you, Ellen.
Yeah. It's been pretty great.
Whoa. I said I could die happy. You just said it's pretty great. What's going on? What do you got cooking up that's going to be so much better than this? Huh? Come on. We've peaked, baby.
I'm fine with peaking, too.
No, we didn't peak. We got so much. But no, I do feel like this was the culminate. Like we were saying at the beginning, this is the culmination of like so many like weird skills that I have and that Ellen's had. And like being able to make something like this is... And to have people react to it, and the people that react to it are people that you would want to hang out with.
That's been really cool.
Yeah, just creating something that's like, we call it our horcrux. It's like a bit of our soul that if someone likes it, odds are they're going to like us. So we just have new friends all over the planet that we haven't met yet. And that is just, now we have that for the rest of our lives.
And truly as a couple of extroverts, having new friends all over the planet that you haven't met yet is like peak extrovert elation. I mean, it's been crazy. We've had like a lot of, it's a weird thing with a podcast because it is, as performers and, you know, even as musicians, it's like, I feel like I'm coming from a world of theater too, where it's like, you're used to doing a show and then like seeing the people after the show. And then you talk to the people after the show. And with this, it's been so crazy, like releasing it in a digital platform, because there isn't that kind of like instant, we don't get to like meet people at the stage door or like see what the audience says. So it's been kind of this wonderful unfolding of people like you who like reach out to us and those friends we haven't met yet kind of a thing. Which has been really cool. And it's kind of a thing that comes out of nowhere sometimes, because there isn't, you know, like I said, there's no stage door where we're like meeting people who saw the show. We're just kind of like get a text from a friend or like someone we knew from a long time ago or someone we don't know who's listened to the show. And that's like, that's really cool. It's like the accessibility, like you don't have to just be in New York to see it or to hear it. It was so fun to do, and it was truly like a culmination of so many things and has put us on track for a lot of other opportunities that never would have happened if we didn't have this like incredible calling card that we could refer people to that, as Chris said, is very much like us in a musical. Like there's a lot of ourselves in the show.
So what are the biggest lessons you've learned from this musical? Like the things that you're taking away from this altogether giant experience?
I've the value of partnership, honestly. The value of Ellen Winter, the value of Kelly Teager, my now wife, Skip and Zach and Ruth and all these wonderful people that came together to make this show. The collaboration. I mean, it is like something is hopefully as good as the people that make it. Right. At least it's a fun experience. And like the hard times are hard, but also great because you value the people that you're with. And you're making it.
Yeah.
And Ellen, you can do it all. You got it all.
You got it all.
I aspire to be as talented as you are.
Oh my God. Wait, likewise. Ugh, jeez. Yeah, partnership's a big one. Partnership, and I learned a lot. I learned how valuable seeing the outside world is while you're writing.
Yeah, we wrote Hear Me Out Outside. Hear Me Outside. Yeah.
Hear Me Outside?
Oh.
What?
Yeah, we sat on the stoop on a sunny day. It was like, yeah. I was like, thank you, son.
Thank you for this nourishment.
A tan in a song.
Yeah, partnership and like, but that also is like a result of partnership. Because you're like, Ellen, you're sad. Why are you sad? And I'm like, I don't know. And you're like, let's go outside. And I'm like, oh, okay then.
So what advice would you give to up-and-coming musical theater artists like myself and many others out there I know are listening?
I mean, mine's tied to the thing that I learned. I feel like you have to have someone that you're talking to about it. You have to have someone that is invested in your idea or is waiting to become invested, I guess.
Someone who can hold you accountable.
Yeah, someone that you have like a regular check-in about your idea and someone who's going to challenge you and be honest about whether they like the things that you're saying, not just that they like that you have things to say, but that they actually like the things and can, I mean, this is all comes down to collaboration. Like these, it just is so hard to just grow this tiny little seedling into a sprout. The conditions of the world are so crazy. It's like you're on the surface of Mars. It's not safe. You got to have two people to cover it. Just keep it alive long enough so that it can be durable enough. So you just got to find that person. And that person can be a co-writer. It can be a composer. It can be a producer. It can be a friend. But it just, takes two.
Yeah. Teamwork is good.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Dreamwork makes the dream work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to double check what Chris just said.
Check, please.
All right. Here's the last question. Please just tell us about all of your upcoming projects and plug whatever you want people to go and see of your work. Just out there.
We're working on another podcast, which is a kind of an adventure-y podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited about that. And we're working on another
not musical. A musical.
Yeah. And we are also working. And not what?
Well, I was going to say the adventure-y one is not a musical.
Yeah. It would have music in it.
It'll have music as an element. Yeah.
Yeah.
No forefront. And then we are working on another musical project.
Yeah. Maybe a couple. Who knows? Any given day. It's like, who knows? we're definitely in the... fostering our tiny sproutlings stage right now, trying to get them to survive in this climate. Keep an eye out 2020, for a new, you have your album. Really?
I'm making an album that Chris is a producer on of a bunch of new original music. So that's coming out in the spring. And we've been plugging away at that since April this year. So it's coming together. And that'll be out in March or April next year.
I love it. I love this. I love the fact that I can just chat with artists. I mean, in no other universe would you like be able to pull up Stephen Sondheim and just chat with them about like how much you like their show. And it is an honor to talk to people who made a musical.
Oh, man.
Like, it's surreal. It really is, because right now I'm just trying not to like fangirl and keep my professionalism up. But
you're doing great.
Doing a great job.
Thank you.
This is so great. We love talking about this show.
Yeah, and about musicals and teamwork musicals and 36 questions. I mean,
hello.
Truly, truly the best subjects.
Well, that's all I had to say, unless there's anything that you want to cover that I didn't.
There was some sports stuff that we left behind.
Yeah.
So when you're doing a pass-up.
When you're right? passing up.
When you pass
the
up.
The quaffle. Wait.
The quaffle.
The.
Wait, is it called a quaffle? Are you being serious right now?
Snitch.
That's what it is. You pass up the snitch, right.
You pass up the snitch.
That's right. Total. That's how you get a field goal.
And that's how you get sports.
Sports, baby.
That's the next show we're working on.
Sports, oh my God.
And it's about a baby who invents a sport and becomes a multi-million dollar Tycoon.
It's untapped potential. You can finally get the sports fans into musical theater.
That's so true. There's so many of them out there.
Oh, man. No, just thank you so much for talking to us, Jesse, and for reaching out.
I mean, you guys are so insanely talented, and I'm so grateful that you gave me your time to, like, talk about this piece and elaborate more about your creative potential. I'm so excited for what you're doing next.
Yeah, truly a pleasure. Let us know if you have any more questions about music making stuff, and keep us in the loop of all your things.
Oh, I will. Well, thank you guys for making 36 Questions and giving me your time to talk about it. I hope you guys have a great night, and you're awesome.
Oh, you are.
All right, thanks, Jesse.
Have a great night.
Have a great night.
And how you say goodbye, but you never said goodbye. You never said goodbye, and I held on to all. With you.
36 Questions is currently available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all podcast platforms. Please go out, give it a listen, give it a review, tweet Ellen and Chris, tell them how flippin' amazing 36 Questions is, because it truly is. Also, if you wouldn't mind while you're there, leave us a review on iTunes, send us some love at Musicals with Cheese, follow us on Instagram or on Twitter, all that jazz. We have a normal episode coming up this Friday, but we hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. Thank you for listening. I'm Jesse McAnally, and we'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.